Doing the Doshot Aran, we're up to page Samaches in the Shalem edition, next to the footnote number 96, page Kuf Pei Zayin in the Mosada of Kuk edition. And the Aran had been discussing that when Yaakov left Israel, he saw the vision of the ladder, and Hashem was telling him that Hashem will be with him until he comes back. And it doesn't mean that he will be with him only until he comes back, but it means even though in Chutz Laaretz, ordinarily, there is less Hashgacha Pratit, Hashem says, I will be with you even until you come back. Sometimes the word until is coming to stress even until that point in time. Even though you might think until that point in time it won't happen, no, even until then. For example, if a person says, I'm not gonna eat anything until I go to sleep. So he means, of course, after I go to sleep, I won't eat anything. But even until I go to sleep, I won't eat anything. And that too is what it means when Hashem tells Yaakov, I won't leave you till I fulfill what I promised you. That's in line with this logic that it means I won't leave you until then, and of course afterwards. But it can't mean that Hashem says, I won't leave you till I bring you back safely to the land of Israel, and then you're on your own. That's not what it means. It means you know that here in Israel I'm with you and I've been watching over you. You're going out to Chutz Laaretz and you have reason to be concerned that maybe I'll leave you when you leave Israel. So I want you to know I won't leave you till you come back, and then obviously I'll be with you when you're back in my land. What Hashem was telling him is, although you know, Yaakov Avinu, that your capacity to connect with me is on a higher level when you're in Israel than in Chutz Laaretz, and therefore logic would dictate that if you're leaving me, so then, so to speak, you're on your own. But Hashem was saying, being that I know you're leaving this country, you're leaving my home, so to speak, you're leaving Israel to fulfill what your father commanded you to do. He told you, don't marry a Canaanite girl, go out to love on my brother-in-law and get a girl from there. Hashem says, being that you're going for a correct reason, Yishmerenu Hashem Yitbach Ve'yeimo, I will protect you, Hashem says, and be with you. Even though technically, once he's leaving Israel, it should fall to reason that he would not be able to connect with Hashem on the same level as he had in the land of Israel. Nonetheless, logic dictated that even at such a cost, he would leave Israel in order to find a wife that was not a Canaanite girl. The forefathers warned their children, do not marry Canaanite women. Because when a person connects with good people, that is a cause that can impact his children and make it far more likely that they will connect to the service of Hashem. So although Yaakov personally has to go out of the chosen land in order to find the right wife, but finding the right wife is worth it because that is supportive of having children that would connect to Hashem. And if a person does not go and find a wife from a good family, a wife who will give him children that are more likely to go in the way of Hashem, gorem lezaro arichuk mimenu. So then he's in effect causing his children to be distant from Hashem. Because you might say, hey, Lavan wasn't such a great guy. He was a pagan. Nonetheless, Yitzchak still preferred to marry into Lavan's family than to have his son take a Canaanite girl. And the logic behind it is as follows. Even though a human being has free will, and it's up to him to choose what type of person he's going to be, as the verse explicitly says, God says, I want you to know, I've given you two choices today. You have a choice to choose life and that which is good, or death and that which is bad, and I recommend choose life. So God says in the Torah clearly, you have free will. You can choose which way you'll go. Umishichpoze yakor Torah bichlala. And anyone who denies the idea of free will is denying the whole Torah. And he's not only denying the Torah, he's also arguing with the nature we see. You see around you, people have choices and they make choices. Because we know that nature can be divided into three. Mechuyav, efshar, v'nimna. When you look at nature, you see some things have to happen. Some things, you let go of something, nature has it, there's a law of nature that gravity is going to pull it down to the earth. Then you have ifshal, you have some things that can happen and cannot happen. For example, will a person wake up on time this morning? Could be yes, could be no. It's a possibility. Vinimna, and then you have things that are impossibilities. If you want to make a rock talk, that's an impossibility. Rocks don't have capacity to talk. How do bushes talk? I didn't know bushes
talk.
And there are things which we say are possibilities, but they're just beyond us. We don't know if it's going to happen or not. You don't know if it's going to rain tomorrow. Could be it will, could be it won't. From our perspective, it's a possibility. Will it be hot or cold tomorrow? Possibly hot, possibly not. But you have things which are efshariyim, which are have potential to happen, but they're ne'lamim etzel ha'teva kmo shehem ne'lamim etzleinu. But even nature cannot predict whether it will happen or not. What will I do this morning? Will I wake up or won't I wake up? Will I choose to learn? Will I choose not to learn? Well, it's not like nature can predict whether it will happen or not. There are things within nature which I don't know whether they'll happen or not, but if you understood enough about nature, then, so to speak, nature can predict what will happen. Then you have things which nature cannot predict. And that is what we call free will. You see, you can't predict what your friend's going to do. Sometimes, you know, you're going to bop him over the head, he'll bop you back. Okay, he still has free will and he might not. You see, he didn't. And if it weren't like that, then we'd be able to predict what our friend's going to do anytime. Just as we know what we're about to do. Or a person might live in the exact opposite situation, like Simcha says, where he has no clue what he's about to do, just like he has no clue what someone else is going to do. But we don't live that way. The average person knows what he's going to do or what he'd like to do. And we know, you just look at the way life is, that we have free choice, and we make decisions, and we don't know what decisions our friend is going to make. We each have capacity and control over what we're going to do. And there's nothing that's going to force us. And there's nothing that's going to withhold us from doing things. We have free choice. That's the idea of free choice. So the first point is, he says, he's coming to explain why does Yaakov leave Israel for a shidduch? Why does Yitzchak want Yaakov to marry into Lavan's family? They're pagans too. So he says the idea is as follows. We all have free will. That's true. But we cannot deny that we all have our tendencies. You have one guy who's a hothead. He has free choice. He can choose to get upset at things or he could choose not to get upset at things. But he does have a predisposition. We do have our own tendencies. Lektzak midot tovot orot. And sometimes we're predisposed to good traits and sometimes to bad traits. And part of this predisposition comes in a person's genealogy. You see it in families. You see that people's children very often take after them. And it's interesting, I've read quite a few stories about adopted children who met their biological parents after years. And then suddenly their spouse, after the adopted child is already married, their own spouse sees in their husband or in their wife, they see the trait of the biological parent. The parent didn't even bring him up. They gave him up for adoption after a week or a day. And yet, there are traits that stay, that go in the blood. מפני שהן טבעיות נמשכות אחר המזק לתת הכנה ואם לא יכריחו. Because they are part of our nature, that although we're not forced to go with our nature, but they are a part of our nature. A part of our genetic makeup, if you'll call it that, makes us predisposed to certain characteristic traits. And that's why when Yitzchak looked around and he saw that the Canaanites had bad traits, they were not kind people. And that's why the forefathers preferred to distance themselves from these people and try to marry into families that do not have those bad traits. Gam ki ye oved avodah zarah. Even though Lavan was a pagan just like the Canaanites. We don't find that when it comes to paganism, the Canaanites were worse than Lavan. But Lavan took in a guest. Lavan had other important traits. He took in a guest. He took in his nephew when he comes in and he's got nowhere to go. לפי שאותן התכונות הרעות... Yeah. Because certain bad tendencies they pass on genetically. Then, and just like there are genetic illnesses, so too there are genetic predispositions. Every person has free will, but where is he more predisposed? Where is he more inclined to go? Because if we look at the mitzvos and the averos, the commandments and the sins that the Torah enumerates, there are two types. Some of the mitzvos and the sins have an impact on the body and the soul as well. Those are the mitzvos that apply to our traits. And some of them only apply to the soul, and those are the mitzvos that have to do with philosophy. What do you believe in? And the mitzvos that pertain to the soul alone, meaning the mitzvos of philosophy, what do you believe in? As bad as it can be, if a person believes in Zeus or any... He says, when it comes to ashkafa, when it comes to what you believe in, so if you believe in the wrong things, that could lead to all kinds of terrible things, right? People can go to satanic cults and kill people and do all kinds of terrible things. But the truth is that what you believe in doesn't pass on genetically to your kids. Yeah, your children might be affected because they grew up in that house, but it's not part of their genetic makeup. Ki en la nefashot yachas v'kruva klal. Because when it comes to our souls, so then our connection, a parent's connection to his child is physical. It's not spiritual. And so when we divide a person, we say his characteristic traits are more connected to his physical body. His philosophies, his thoughts, those are primarily in the mind. So the mitzvos that pertain to the mind, don't be a pagan, believe in one God. Those mitzvos, even if someone doesn't observe them, that doesn't genetically affect his children. But the mitzvos that affect the body, the mitzvos that are about what type of person are you, do you invest your strength in helping other people, or do you invest your strength in hurting other people? Well, those mitzvos are part of who we are, and we do pass that on to our children. They have to overcome it, but they're starting with a few steps down, and it's ingrained in them. And so the sins that affect the soul and the body, those are the sins that pertain to the way we treat other people. Being that the body is a derivative of the parent, so there the body is affected genetically. So where is it that we say that a mitzvah or a sin pertains to the body and the soul as well, and therefore passes on, you pass it on genetically, those are the mitzvos that pertain to our characteristic traits. Hatred, jealousy, cruelty, miserliness, those type of traits. Ki'elu yasu roshem ra b'nefesh mitzad shen averot v'tchuna ra. Those affect our soul because they are a bad trait. U'milvad ze yasu roshem b'guf al haderech shaver. And aside from the way they impact the soul, they also impact the body, as I will explain. Yes?
You're saying only sins get passed on.
Well, no, also mitzvos. Both. He's talking about sins, but the reverse is also true. When a person is a kind person, so that affects who he is, and then his children are more predisposed to being kind people. So he's saying that the things that pertain to our characteristic traits, whether we like it or not, our children's starting point is where we are. Now, they have free choice, that's what he began with, and they have a responsibility to overcome it. But when you're looking for a shidduch, you have to realize that the philosophies, everything that's theoretical, that doesn't pass on to the kids. You try to get that right, but the children won't be predisposed to being a pagan because their mother was a pagan. The child is born tabula rasa in that sense. But when it comes to his traits, he's not a tabula rasa. He's not a clean slate. When it comes to his traits, he's starting off with certain predispositions, and that he does get from both parents.
So when you're talking about like holding on to their cultures, and you also apply that to persons like Hashkafa, you know,
Yeah.
So where do we draw the line between where someone's physical traits and where someone's mental traits are going to start to begin? In a post-spinozistic intellectual community, climate, people are going to say, look, it's just two sides of the same coin. It's mind and body, same thing. You could say, if somebody has... if someone has a tendency to have heartburn, and then it leads him to have like a more tense kind of personality, and then his outlook on life reflects that. Maybe he'll be more inclined to believe in a religion that accords to whatever the spiritual equivalent of heartburn would be. I don't know. Like, how are we going to
say, where do you eat, no?
Well, eventually people can take steps to control, but there are all kinds of things. If someone's physiological constitution surely has an influence on his mental constitution, and vice versa.
Well, I don't see why you feel that so.
No, well, because
I know people tend to think that people who are overweight are happier, are more jolly. But research doesn't support that. Research supports that that's what people think they are, but not that that's what they really are.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that people, like, we have a statement like, you are what you eat. Now, let's say someone tends to...
But who said that's true?
Well, because let me explain how it works. Because if you're eating a lot of stuff that's high in certain vitamins that are good for your eyesight, your eyes are going to be better. People who eat a lot of carrots tend to have better eyesight. It's just the way vitamins work as they affect your body, right?
I don't know if that's true.
There's a word for two, but they're trying to explain radar. And the British are trying to explain how they're shooting down German, I think, was it the German...
Beta carrots?
Well, no, the Germans are trying to explain how they're shooting down British planes. The British are trying to explain how they're shooting down German planes, they said. We feed a lot of carrots to our anti-aircraft.
There it is. So, but they say it's the vitamin beta carotene. You're saying it doesn't work. You're saying that.
I don't know.
But what if the case? Let's say someone eats a lot of food that they have discovered that bad carbohydrates like tend to make people sluggish. People that have less energy because they sugar.
Is that going to change their view on life?
It will. It affects you. It affects everything.
It affects your energy, but how is that going to change your
because your because your mind because your personality doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's part of the overall part, and it's not like, oh, there's this part of me that is how I think about things, and then there's like how I feel.
I mean, you have people from one group of Hasidim, you know, who might be morbidly obese, and others who might be in great shape, and it's not going to change their outlook, you know, on who their spiritual leader is or how they're going to do a certain mitzvah. They're going to do it the same way because I think that some people
might very well be more enthusiastic about doing certain things and some might not. I mean, there's of course they're going to toe the party line or whatever and say this is my ready. But look, there are people who are going to wake up in the morning and rush to wash their hands and do this and that, and there are people who aren't, and they can be part of the same Hasidic group. And I think
let's hold off and see just one second. Yeah, Mike.
Well, you get physical character traits from both
some from one pattern, some from the other.
Right.
not sure personal character traits, like a man has received the potential from his dad, and you never find, like, apart from like your Israeli entry to the Eurovision Song Contest, you don't get like a man turning out like his mother, do you?
Really? Because Chazal say that children do turn out like the mother's siblings, like the mother's brothers, which I think...
I have never met anyone that does that.
Really?
Yeah.
I see it in a lot. I see it in my siblings. I see it in my children. I see many characteristic traits that my uncles have. I see in my siblings. I don't see it in myself. And many characteristics, traits of my brothers-in-law I see in my children. Now, it's a little difficult, you know, sometimes these are things which are hard to prove because maybe you see what you want to see. You know, maybe if I wanted to see my brother's characteristic traits in my kids, I'd see them. I don't see it as blatantly as I see my brother-in-law's characteristic traits in my sons. I don't have sisters. So I don't know, Chazal said the...
Isn't it that the sins of the fathers are inherited by the sons?
But how is that relevant to this? I'm not following.
Because if the bad things can... You say the bad things can be passed on, then the good things can be passed on.
Sure, yeah. Certain characteristic traits. The child will be naturally predisposed to many things that his parent was. In certain characteristic traits. It doesn't mean he has to turn out that way.
If you've got a great woman,
right?
She marries like someone with not quite so many good character traits, those sons aren't going to turn out great like the mother.
They could turn out either way. You might have half-half, and you might have a balance, and you might have a lot of things.
You won't have more than his father's potential.
Why? You know, I've seen...
education raise someone up.
I think it can go either way. Meaning, it's true that had they married a Canaanite woman, so then their children would have inherited from both of them. And it could be some of their children would have inherited more from the father and some would have inherited more from the mother. But that being the case, they wanted their children to get positive plus positive. So that was the idea of getting a girl from a good family where they had good traits, even though their philosophies weren't great. You're right. Had they married a Canaanite girl, it doesn't mean all their children would have been thieves and who knows what. It means that the potential for it to turn out good is less. So it could be that each child will be less than they could have been, or it could be some will be like this and some will be like that. I'm not sure which way it plays itself out. We do get from both parents. It's not only from one. Okay, and we'll pick up here, Bezachim, next week.